As Andy said, I've had a chance to speak at other places, and in 2014 I was a student minister in Prince Rupert, BC, a little town in the seaside, and it was a great little place. It rained a lot. They told me to bring gumboots and a rain jacket, which I did. And I was at a Presbyterian church there, and there was about 8 people in the church on a given Sunday. And I got to know those 8 people quite well. And it was a really good experience. Alicia came out, actually. We were dating then. And so that was a great time. And then various other places around Vancouver I've been invited to speak. But this is different. And the one difference is that this is our church family. This is our community. And I see this as a great honor and responsibility, too. And so as much as I'm excited to be here and to be able to share, there's, you know, that sense of weight as well. With that said, the kids are here, and this isn't going to be that boring. You're actually going to be part of the message, if you can believe it. First thing we'll do is read our scripture, and then we're going to actually have some dialogue where you help us to get a sense of what we're talking about. So, let's read together. Is this the scrolling type, Andy?
Yes, you should do this. No. Just two fingers.
Okay, great. So let's read this text together. This is Revelation 1, 9, and this is the same text that we read before together, and we'll just be looking at the part after Andy left off. So let's read. I, John, your brother, together, and partner in the tribulation and the kingdom and the patient endurance that are in Jesus, was on the island called Patmos on account of the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet saying, write what you see in a book and send it to the 7 churches, to Ephesus and to Smyrna and to Pergamum and to Thyatira and to Sardis and to Philadelphia and to Laodicea. Then I turned to see the voice that was speaking to me, and on turning, I saw 7 golden lampstands, and in the midst of the lampstands, one like a son of man, clothed with a long robe and with a golden sash around his chest. The hairs of his head were white wool, like snow. His eyes were like a flame of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze, refined in a furnace, and his voice was like the roar of many waters. In his right hand he held 7 stars. From his mouth came a sharp, 2-edged sword, and his face was like the sun shining in full strength. When I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. But he laid his right hand on me, saying, fear not, I am the first and the last, and the living one. I died, and behold, I am alive forevermore. And I have the keys of death and Hades. Amen. It's a pretty amazing picture. So, as you can tell, this is very vivid. It has some really interesting describing words in it. And Vanna Carter, if you want to come up, we're going to try and get a bit of an understanding of how words can have meaning and how descriptions can teach us things. So for all those kids, the older kids who are still here, they're going to help us. You're going to have to be able to shout out what you think the answer is. So Alicia has our page here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to write something. It's going to be like a symbol or an image, and then you guys have to tell me what you think that means. Got it? You all on board? Okay. Ready? This is going to be an easy one to start. Back there too, Janine. All right. There. Okay, we have a line. There we go. So that's a good start. Anything else? Does that mean anything else to you guys?
One.
One? Oh, one. That's a good one. A staff. Okay. Staff. Anything else? Those are all good descriptor words. Yeah. We'll just call that the LBT. Long black thing. Those are all good. So, what do you notice? All we have is a line here, but you've been able to tell me all kinds of things. Look at all these little descriptors just from this one long black thing, right? Okay. So, you get the picture, like it's actually telling you things. And so it's one, it's a line, it's a staff, it's a long black thing. Okay? Next one. It's going to get a little bit harder. Okay, before we move on to the next one, I'm going to make one little change, then you tell me what it is. Okay, now what is it? Okay, it's an L, that's right. But it's also a skinny man standing sideways. Just like me? Okay. Skinny man standing sideways. Very skinny, he has a skinny head too. Okay, you ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Okay, next one. All right. All right. This guy, he's making use of our previous terms. That's correct. Just flipped on its side, right? It was like an earthquake happened or something. Okay, so we have all of those. Anything additional? I know anyone that has taken any math could probably... Janita? Horizontal. Yeah, that's minus. Okay, so we have horizontal. There we go. Horizontal, and it's a minus. Anything else? Line. It's a line minus. So there's a... Okay, yeah. Someone who's not... They're like impassioned. They don't know what they feel, right? That's like when... Okay, yeah.
I don't know how to describe that.
It's a weird smile. Not... It's half a smile. Say that. Okay, there we go. Okay, now, just to finish this off, now what is this?
A skinny man
laying down. Yeah. Oh, this guy picks up things quickly. All right. He got it. Okay, now it's going to get even harder. Okay, you guys ready for this? No, it's not. But you're doing pretty good, so I think you're going to be able to get this one. You ready? Cross. He got it. It is an addition sign if you only had this much. It's a little bit longer than an addition sign, so cross, he got it. So, if it's a cross, what can you tell me about cross then? Jesus. Okay, so there's something already. It's actually telling us about a person. Anything else? Death. Okay. Nails. Anything else?
Blood.
Sticks. All right, lots of the painful stuff, but that's okay.
Janita?
Blood.
Okay.
Oh, wood. Well, both. I heard blood, but also wood.
What does it wood represent?
So, you're telling me descriptions. What big ideas does this represent to you? What was that?
Easter.
Easter. That's right. Easter, that's what we refer to. It's kind of our holiday of the death and resurrection of Jesus. So you guys have given descriptions of this, what the cross is, and you realize or recognize that all we did was take this and this and put it together, and all of a sudden, this has all this meaning plus more. You guys have said all kinds of other stuff. Yeah? Yeah, this is the intersection of the standing and the sleeping man. Yeah, that's also there, if we did that and that. So, the point being that something as simple as that, two lines that are intersecting, and it tells you all kinds of stuff, right? And why is that? You have all kinds of information to tell me because you already know about that, right? You know about a line, you know about a number one, a minus, you know about a cross, and that means all kinds of stuff, and it's very simple, right? That's how symbols work. So the cross symbolizes things. Now, the next thing, now that you have that idea, right, is that other things can do the same thing. So the other thing we can do is look at clothing, right? Okay, so let's say if you guys imagine just for a second with me, if I was wearing leather boots and Wrangler jeans and a belt buckle and a plaid shirt and a hat, what would I be?
Cowboy.
All right, so what does a cowboy do? Tell me what a cowboy. Rounds up sheep. Yep. Or cows. Rides a horse. Yep.
Breaks laws.
Bad cowboys. Okay, so a cowboy has a job. He does things. He rides a horse. He rounds up sheep or cows. All kinds of things, right? So again, based on clothing, you're able to tell me an identity and also what that person does. Let's try something else. Let's say if I was wearing big steel-toed boots and like Carhartt jeans and builder, construction worker.
Carpenter.
Exactly. So tell me about a carpenter. What does a carpenter do? Right. Make stuff out of wood. There's a connection to the cross again. Right. So again, you guys, you know about an identity of a person and who they are and what they do based on what they're, how they're dressed. So here's the final thing, guys. Let's go back to this text and we're going to look at the first part of this description, right? Because we read through a description of this person called the Son of Man, and it said all kinds of things. So it says, like the Son of Man clothed with a long robe and with a golden sash. So a long robe. Do you think we can make the same judgment and say, based on some of the descriptions of this figure, we can tell who they are? Okay. So, now you guys are going to get to tell me which of the following figures you think might be described in the text that we read. Who's on the left?
Doctor.
Okay. Doctor on the left, probably. On the right? Someone who hasn't taken a bath in a long time? Someone said minor, that's right. How about the center? Who do you think those guys are?
People,
yeah. What's unique about them? They blow trumpets. How are they dressed?
Gangsters.
I'm not sure what gang they're part of, but... Okay, yeah, they're making some connections there. They have long white robes on, right? Does it sound familiar? Right. We just read about a robe, wearing a white robe, or a robe in our text. These guys are priests, and they're blowing trumpets, and they have little animals there, and this is part of their ceremony of making an offering. So that's literally a fairly recent picture. They're Levitical priests. They have a certain role, and they dress a certain way in white, long robes, right down to their feet. So what this is telling us, and here's the point that I want you to get from this text, when the Bible, especially in Revelation, has really descriptive words, it's telling us something. And that something is that this figure is most likely a priest, or at least has some of the qualities of a priest. So, and you're able to tell me all kinds of things about the cross, you're able to tell me things about cowboys and carpenters and like that, especially to the people who were reading this letter for the first time, they would tell all kinds of things about that priest based on, oh, I know what a priest is. He makes offerings to God. He's the one who we go to, and they would make an offering so that their sins could be covered, right? So that's the point. Now, at the end of this text, to wrap all this up so you can kind of understand this, when we read that this figure in the Bible is a priest, at the end he says, do not fear. And do you know why he's saying that? It's because when we come to Jesus, who is this figure, who is a priest for us, he's made a way to God. And when we have a way to God, there's no need to fear. So fear is done away with. We talked about in the song we sang today that we have no need to fear, right? This is one of the reasons, is because Jesus has made a way for us to God. So you guys have done a great job. You participated. You helped us to learn something. You had great ideas. You caught on to the whole lying, sitting man thing. So we're going to carry on. And if you guys want to move on to your activity, then you can do so now.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, guys. So that worked reasonably well. this has been, it's been a great text for me to get into and do a lot of learning. And I haven't spent a lot of time studying Revelation, and so it's been insightful. And obviously, learning about symbols is really important. One of the things that I found helpful when I was considering this text and the church that it was written to. They identify only seven churches, right? And thinking about John on the Isle of Patmos writing, one thing that was really important was the time. So when did this happen? And it's most likely he wrote around the mid-90s AD. So if you think about that, we think that Jesus' ministry was around 30 to 33 AD, somewhere in there. That would place this letter to these churches somewhere around 60 years later. And just that in itself would say that some of these people in the church could have been alive when Jesus had his ministry on earth. So possibly first-person experience. There would be people there that might have been first generation. Their parents may have been alive, or they may know some people who were alive at the time, and then it may carry on to third generation and somewhat removed, right? So you'd have a mix of people who had some sense of familiarity and the reality of Jesus' earthly ministry, right down to those who would be quite removed, and would be asking, like, okay, so I've heard about this figure Jesus, and I heard that he was on earth, but I have no way of really connecting to this figure, and what should I think about this Jesus, and are the stories true, right? One other thing is that this many 2,000 years later, roughly, we have all of that history for writers and theologians and church history to think through and write about and talk about who is Jesus. So a lot of ideas have been very refined for us. In some ways, you know, that has, you know, it's led to many different things, right? But if we put ourselves in the shoes of these people, they didn't have all that. This was all very new, very raw in a way. So placing ourselves in that time frame, for me, I was thinking, what would be similar for me? If I wanted to put myself in their shoes thinking about who Jesus was, removed by about 60 years, what would be similar? And for me, today, going back that roughly that amount of time would put me around World War II. Now, I am quite removed from that time. I had a great uncle who fought in World War II, but I didn't really know him that well, and I certainly didn't ask him much about it. So for me, it's just a lot of reading and hearing stories and watching movies and that's basically the only way that I can kind of identify with anything that happened there. But when you have just intellectual knowledge, sometimes it's hard to make a real connection, right? And so that's kind of what I think is the situation here. And when we read this text, and especially this apocalyptic literature, right? And the first slide was the really real. And it's about revelation. I think, in a sense, that leads us into something greater than an intellectual knowledge of this figure of Jesus. So, having brought up World War II, I enjoy history, and I enjoy watching things and reading things, and especially things around the world wars. I don't know why, I just enjoy kind of learning about what happened in the past. And so, I think there's one event in World War II that actually would help us to get a handle on something that's being addressed in this text. And that is a specific campaign in World War II around the town of Nijmegen. And it was specifically about Nijmegen Bridge. So Nijmegen is in the Netherlands, and it's towards the eastern part of the Netherlands, not far from the border with Germany. The Allied forces, of course, made their D-Day invasion 1944 in June. And part of their plan was to recapture Europe. Nijmegen was part of that plan. So in the fall, it was September, by the time that they made it to this town, they had a plan. It was to knock out some of the industrial areas of Germany. And to do that, they had to come through this city, which had a very critical bridge to get over the, I think it's the Waal River, and then carry on to where they're going. And there's other bridges as well. But the whole campaign at this point was based on bridges. They had to be able to have these bridges in place for their infantry and troops and supplies to move and then complete their task. In order to do this, they used paratroopers. So they had some guys paratroop in, and they had some also ground forces. And the whole plan was on a strict time schedule. They had a certain amount of time to get this done in order for a larger army to come through as well. Basically what happened was that they were delayed. They were delayed in fighting their way through the town that was occupied and delayed in fighting their way onto the bridge. And you can imagine these soldiers' sense of urgency and anxiety and worry when they realized that there was a huge amount, not only this huge army that was coming behind them that needed to get through, but an entire campaign which could have a huge effect on the entire war. They were focused on this bridge, getting across it and keeping it intact. The reality that they were facing was there was no functional way to get across this water without that bridge. So they fought their way through. They did end up taking the bridge, and there was lots of losses, and it was a semi-successful campaign. But the point to take here was the essential nature of the bridge and the campaign and the fact that there was no way across without that bridge. There was many other things that went on, and I was talking to Alicia about this earlier and went into far too much detail. She's like, no, you can't say all that. bridges, the essential nature. Having said that, let's turn to our text and work our way through probably just the first little bit. We won't get through all of the different identifiers. But, I forgot to show you my 1944 picture. So that was obviously modern day. This is in 44. And initially, they went over the bridge with tanks. And you can see the same bridge, but in a state of kind of chaos and probably post-takeover. So going back to our text, I skipped I skipped over the initial parts where we read about the voice, right? The voice behind me with the sound of a trumpet and John having to turn. Just quick comment about that is in literature like this, especially it's a vision, John's talking about things that he saw. I think it's actually important to grasp the concept that he heard a voice behind him. This was not just some dream where he passed out and he was just imagining this stuff in his head. This was a voice behind him clearly speaking, not only clearly speaking, but speaking loudly, like the sound of a trumpet. And for me, just that initial part is that Jesus is speaking clearly and he's speaking loudly. This is not just kind of a quiet murmur about what's going to happen. This is a loud proclamation of who Jesus is and what is happening in the future. John turns to see, and he sees a voice. In some of, actually, Daryl Johnson, I read his book called Discipleship on the Edge on this, and others also mention the fact that seeing a voice is kind of contradictory, right? Like, how do you see a sound? But in some sense, that gives the incomprehensible nature of what's been spoken of, right? Like when there's something that's hard to understand, it almost is given away there. So he turns to see the voice, and he sees a vision, and that is the Son of Man among the lampstands, and he talked about that last time, the Son of Man figure going back to Daniel, where Daniel has a vision of a Son of Man figure, and among the lampstands is Jesus among his churches. So, getting to the robe, we talked about how the long robe gives away a sense of the priesthood of Jesus. Here, I think it said, clothed with a long robe. In the original language, it says a long robe down to the feet. There's not many places in Scripture where it uses a description like that, long robe down to the feet, but it's pretty clear it's talking about a priest figure. And it's the same with the sash, especially a golden sash around the chest. That was, again, something worn by the priests. A sash or a belt that was worn around the waist was more so for the working person. It was functional. This is a decorative kind of a sash or a belt worn high up. The other thing with a sash like that is sashes are occasionally still used today, but it usually signifies something like victory. The winner of a beauty pageant or a race or something is given some sort of a sash that's worn around the chest or the shoulder. So I think that sense plays into this figure as well, not only the priest, but the victor, resting in victory. The next section, Jesus as Ancient One. The next description is the hairs of his head were white, like wool, like snow. This also is a reference, I think a specific reference. And it comes from Daniel again, Daniel chapter 7, in the same vision, where Daniel has a vision of the Son of Man before the Ancient of Days. And this is God on his throne. And God in that vision is the one with the white hair and gives authority to the Son of Man. And here, the description is of this Son of Man having the white hair, which indicates, I think, that Jesus is saying here that he is indeed God. He is the Ancient of Days. Whereas the Ancient of Days gave authority to the Son of Man figure, Jesus is one and the same, affirming his godhood. And the other thing with white hair or gray hair throughout the Old Testament scripture was that it denoted wisdom and honor. Those with gray hair had, I think, lived long enough to have gray hair. They're probably fairly smart people. But that I think that plays into the description here. Jesus as the judicial one might not be the perfect description here, but the verse references is his eyes were flames of fire. I find this to be like probably one of the most striking features. There's other features as well, shining face and the sword coming from the mouth. But eyes of fire really, I think, are self-explanatory. If you think of someone with a piercing gaze, you kind of know what that means. I think just times 10, eyes of fire, right? This is someone who is insightful and can kind of see below the surface level. This eyes of fire phrase was also common in ancient times, and it was to indicate someone like a king or a ruler who is especially quick-witted and intelligent, and someone who could also kind of be given to a quick wrath, but especially was kind of a piercing gaze and was able to quickly be able to determine kind of the underlying issues or motives. So especially someone like a judge or a ruler who had to make decisions. Think of like Solomon, right, in his well-known judgment of the two women fighting over whose child belonged. And his solution was brilliant, right? So it didn't take him long. So there's, as I said, I think I'll just stick to these first few descriptions. And there's many more there, but I think that's enough to give us a sense or to work on what's being said about this figure and what does it mean. One thing, can you grab me that water, please? One thing is that Jesus speaks powerfully. He speaks clearly and precisely to his people. That's, again, from that the initial talk about not only his voice being like a trumpet, but later on in the text, it mentions his voice being like a river or a flowing stream. So there's this power to his message and to his voice. He speaks powerfully, clearly, and precisely. So we talked about symbols, like, should we picture Jesus as this figure? The white hair, the long robes, the blazing eyes, and so on. Well, I would say no. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I think for the purposes of this literature, apocalyptic literature, and the message that's being proclaimed, what this is, it's not a visual image that we need to keep with us. It's a message, and it's a very clear message. It's really speaking in picture stories. What we know about Jesus was that he was transfigured. When he died and he rose again, he had a new physical body that was transformed in some way, and he rose again. As far as we know, he rose in body, and that is how we can understand Jesus to be now. Second, in order to understand the significance of priests for today, Daryl Johnson points to the English meaning of the word priest. I found this especially interesting and hopefully will connect to our earlier story. The English word priest comes from Latin pontifex, and pontifex means bridge builder. So for me, as I was thinking about this again, priest for me is an idea, something that exists. I haven't experienced it. I get the point of a priest, but I've never been there for any kind of a sacrifice or a ceremony, and it's something very foreign. However, bridge builder does make sense to me. I've experienced a bridge, and I know how a bridge works and have used a bridge. And for me, that means a bridge allows me to get over an obstacle, a cavern, a body of water, something that I would otherwise be unable to get over functionally. And this is where, as you probably realize, this whole battle of Nijmegen comes in. There, those bridges were critical to those soldiers, to the whole campaign. Without the bridge, they were lost. Not only personally, but the whole campaign, the whole sense of this, what they were about, would be utterly impossible without the use of these bridges, if not just set back. And just the sense of total reliance, I think, came through for me there. The third thing is the how of the priestly role. The role of the priest was really about the sacrifice, and Jesus here as priest was the ultimate sacrifice that wiped away the guilt of our sin before God once for all. And here I see Jesus clearly saying that he is the bridge builder that enables us to have relationship with God. So what does this mean then? How can we apply this to the church? And also, what does it mean for us today? Well, this message is to a hurting, scared church. If you remember when Andy talked about his intro to this whole text, the seven churches that were mentioned were being persecuted. Domitian and one of the other Roman emperors was on a bit of a rampage, and these churches were suffering. These people were suffering, and they were scared. So the context is people who are looking for reassurance. The end, after the description of the Son of Man figure, Jesus says his message to John after he falls dead, like a dead person, is, John, don't be afraid. And really I see that as kind of the paradigm for understanding all of these descriptions, these symbols, the symbolic clothing, the symbolic acts and features. Don't be afraid, I am the priest. So, first, do not fear. I have made a way for you to access God. When we're faced with tribulation and suffering, what is it that we want to know? We want to know why, and we want to know how, and will this end, and who's in control? Well, Jesus says, I am the priest who has made a way to God, and God is the one who's in control. When we think about the title Ancient of Days, it's the one who was from the beginning and who is at the end. And in fact, that's what Jesus says at the end. I am the beginning, I am the end. I was the one who died, and I came back to life. Jesus is all-encompassing. He knows everything that is happening now and will happen in the future, and is in fact in control. When it comes to a hurting and scared church, that's what you want to know. You want to know who's in control. And Jesus is saying, I have made a way to the one who is in control. Second, don't fear. I'm the Ancient of Days who will overcome. Again, that's talking about his everlasting nature, the one who created and who finished, who will finish. Third, do not fear. I see into the heart of all people, the eyes of fire. Nothing is hidden from me. I'm not taken by surprise. I don't know why that's going down, but again, for the hurting church and for those who are looking for comfort, the one who perceives, who has the eyes of fire to see, the one who can see into not only the hearts of those who are persecuting, but our own hearts. In a sense, it's a challenge to us as much as it is a reassurance when Jesus says, I'm not fooled by your pretenses. I'm not fooled by the things that you're trying to show, or you think that you're showing that you are loving or you're doing whatever. I see through all of that. And it's a challenge to us, but it's also reassurance when he says that those who would seek to set themselves up over and above me or over and above my authority are, in fact, without excuse and without foundation because I see through it. For me, I'm left with a renewed sense of God's ultimate control, even when things seem out of control with this text. I think one of the things, for me anyway, when it comes to recognizing and applying Scripture and who Jesus is to take it down to the point where on a on a day-to-day level, I am grappling with and understanding the assurance that comes. And I subtitled this as assurance because of this fact, that all of these things are really at do not fear, and it's giving us a sense of that assurance when things are not right. And now, maybe not to the same extent that the churches were experiencing persecution and suffering, but we experience suffering. We experience those same things, and also there's times when we can feel shaken, right? When we have things that are taken for granted. We have safety. We have security. We have a secure government. We have health care. We have a police force. We have emergency services. We have all those things that make us comfortable, I think, to a reasonable extent. But what happens when some of those things begin to be shaken? I think that would deeply disturb me anyway. So what are we left with then? Oh, well, hopefully someone can patch together a better government or a better healthcare or better this and that, right? But that might not happen. So then what are we left with? We're left with, do not fear, because I am the one. I am the one who's brought you to God. I think it's the thing that we're ultimately left with as far as hope. When there's no hope left in the things that human societies and human cultures can create to give us that sense of comfort, when all that goes away, whether that's now or in the future, or maybe we will never experience that, but regardless, there's going to be things that will shake what we feel is our giving us security and shake giving us comfort. So for me, that's what this text says. It is comfort, and it lets me rest in the comfort of Jesus, who is our bridge builder, who is merciful, and who is the one who lives forever and welcomes us to live with him. That's the amazing blessing that we have. Revelation, I think, is amazing, and Eugene Peterson talks about this. Revelation doesn't really teach us anything new, necessarily. He says Revelation teaches us or tells us things about Jesus in a new way. It gives us a sense of maybe insight that we wouldn't normally have. And I find that assuring in some ways, especially as we continue through this and look at different images of Jesus. So I'll leave that with you tonight, and hopefully you can continue to read through this text and just resonate with Jesus as our bridge builder and the one who is there for us.